This is Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free, KPFT, Houston, 90.1 FM.
Welcome to Growing Up in America with noted child advocate hosts Dr. Bob Sanborn and Diana Zarzuelo. On today's show, joining us today is Dr. Terry Greer, HISD superintendent, with an update on the district's extended learning time initiative and his strategic next steps for HISD.
And in the news today, is it time for the Ronald McDonald people to retire? A group of health professionals in Chicago claim that there's a link with this well-known clown and childhood obesity.
And our popular social conscience scale thumbs up, thumbs down, Secretary of Education Arnie Duncan wants to ban NCAA teams with low graduation rates from playing. Do you agree?
And our guest for the whole hour is Jeff Mosley. He's the president and CEO of the Greater Houston Partnership. And our feature today, we're going to discuss and focus on corporate responsibility and whether we as a community are doing enough to prepare our kids for the future workforce.
And as always, we welcome your phone call. So jot down our number and call with a question for Dr. Greer or Mr. Mosley or a comment on the news. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
So welcome to Growing Up in America. Diana, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. I love the spring weather that's going on.
This is like, it's a perfect day, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was the back page of the Houston Chronicle today where they do the weather. They said this is a 10 of a day.
Wow.
On a scale of 10. That's pretty good. So welcome to Growing Up in America on Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston. Today, as always, a discussion on our children, public policy, politics, and our future, and how do we as a nation do when it comes to taking care of all of our kids. Every week, we aim to fill the same 58 minutes with lively discussion on the status of children in America from experts on the quality of life for America's children. And as always, I'm Dr. Bob Sanborn, along with Diana Zarzuelo. And as Diana mentioned, we want to encourage you to call in. Our guest for the whole hour today is Judge Jeff Mosley. He's the president and CEO of the Greater Houston Partnership. And Jeff, the Greater Houston Partnership, for many who don't know, is sort of like a bigger chamber of commerce almost, isn't it? Or not. Correct me.
Well, Dr. Bob, you hit it right on. 21 years ago, the historic Houston Chamber of Commerce merged with Houston Economic Development Corporation, which merged with Houston World Trade. So under this umbrella, the partnership, we have this tremendous business association. Nothing quite like it in America.
It is sort of amazing, and it's very powerful, isn't it? It's a very powerful organization in our town, and mainly because you're the head of it. Is that right?
We probably get way too much credit for having the power, but we do enjoy engaging our members in policy discussions, not unlike the one we're going to have today. So it's a pleasure to be with you and Diana.
Yeah,
thanks so much for being here.
Absolutely. I think as we get into it today, as we go on, the business community, especially in a state like Texas, especially in Houston, can have an impact, whether it be from the bully pulpit or from some of the innovative programs that are happening through our corporations in Houston. They can have a good impact. But I guess one of the questions we'll have is, are we doing enough in that regard? Because there's a lot to do with our kids here in Houston, isn't there?
Can't wait to talk about that. But clearly, our area is so vast and so diverse and so compelling. When you look at the demographics where we're in one of the largest cities in America with no ethnic majority, yes, there are some innovative things that we are doing and even can be doing more of.
Right. Hey, let's go to, I guess we're going to go out to our buddy, Terry Greer, who's on the line. Dr. Greer, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for being back on Growing Up in America again. You've been having a busy initial term as superintendent, haven't you?
It's been fun.
Diana and I talk about this quite often in terms of as we look at HISD and all the things that need to be done, it seems like you and your staff are hitting on all cylinders. You're doing a lot of the right things. I mean, do you feel like you're hitting on a lot of the right things at this point?
Well, we're working hard, and I can tell you, in any big organization, any big bureaucracy, as you know, change is hard. Change is hard even when it's needed. Change is difficult even when it's called for. And it's really an adjustment problem for some folks. You talk about wanting a quality teacher in every classroom. That seems like a really common sense approach to improving schools. And we know how important that is. But it's, I tell you, the pushback that you get when you start having that kind of dialogue and conversation can be quite interesting.
Yeah, I think that's right. Last Monday in the Houston Chronicle, that big editorial that we wrote at Children at Risk on the idea of supporting you in doing this whole extended school year, or the possibility of an extended school year, at least with some specific schools. How is that proposal coming along for you, Dr. Greer?
Well, we're basically trying to figure it out, to be frank with you. For example, if we know that the pitfalls of having an 11 or 12 month summer vacation for many of our students who particularly speak English as a second language, and students who are behind academically and need more time, yet in Texas, because of the strong lobby of a group in the summer that has to do with the entertainment, and our tourism group, we can't start school until the last Monday of the week of August.
Right.
And so if you try to stretch that calendar out where you have a smaller summer period, you're giving the state test in May, and then you have six more weeks of school. And so we're trying to figure out, how do we deal with that? And, you know, we haven't given up on the option. But I tell you, our state sometimes does not make it very easy to be innovative.
Well, it's sort of interesting, isn't it? When it comes to these school days, you know, I know there are about 175 instructional days right now in HISD. And across the country, it averages about 180. In Germany, 200. Japan, 220. It would make sense for us in Texas to say, hey, if a school district is interested in expanding, I mean, it could only make life, provided, of course, that we have good teachers, it could only make life better and these kids more academically acceptable, basically, if we have this extended school year. Doesn't that seem to make sense?
There's no question. And, you know, I know there's a young researcher at Harvard University that's just done a big study on our KIPP schools around the country and on the Harlem Teaching Children's Zone schools, and have found a very positive correlation between extended time, additional time, and student learning.
Dr. Greer, what from the exemplary charter schools like KIPP and Yes Prep, what else has served as inspiration for when you're looking at best practices in normal public schools?
Well, number one, there's no question that they put a great deal of emphasis on a quality teacher in every classroom, and they start their schools that way, and they recruit very, very, very hard to try to find teachers that have the attitude that we're going to do whatever it takes. Failure is temporary. We're not going to use excuses of family background. We're going to do what we have to do to make sure not only that these children graduate from high school, but they go to college. That's one issue. Another issue is their dogged use of data. They use data to see how kids progress, and then they do something that's not that novel, but it's something we should be doing in every school in America. And that's when kids don't master objectives, they take time and they go back and reteach, and they don't reteach the same thing the same way, just louder. They actually reformulate how they teach the concept to try to work with each other, the teachers in a school, to figure out what I need to do different this time so that my kids get it.
Right. In addition, Dr. Bob and I were at the State of the Schools address, and we're so excited to hear all of the wonderful things that you have planned for HISD, and one of which was the use of data and actually linking student achievement or regression to teachers and where teachers are prepared. When do you think that data will be available? Will it be available to the public?
Of course, we're going to be very transparent with what we find. It may be painful, but we're going to be very transparent. We're working with the New Teachers Project right now, and they are right in the middle of designing surveys and feedback instruments for us to gather data internally from all of our different data points, and also from our staff, from our parents, from our students, etc. That project is supposed to, the first phase of that project is supposed to run through this August.
Great.
Hey, Dr. Greer, we have Judge Jeff Mosley, the president of the Great Houston Partnership, here in the studio with us. Jeff, you have a question for Dr. Greer?
Dr. Greer, what a delight to welcome you again to Houston. You're doing a tremendous service here to our education community, and we were pleased last Wednesday when you joined your colleagues at the executive committee. And I was especially fascinated in your discussion about the extended calendar year. And you went into some detail about how state law is kind of holding back local boards from making this local decision. Maybe that's something you could tell our listening audience about.
Yeah, that'd be good.
It really is, and I don't know, Jeff, whether this is accurate or not. I just know I've been told that several years ago the tourism industry's lobbied hard for across the state of Texas for schools not to be able to begin until the last week of August, which when you begin school that late, if you want to do an elongated school year, the state only tests at a certain time, and it only gives tests at the end of May. And so if you try to push out your school calendar by doing that, you're going to end up, the school year will end up ending 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks after the state test. So you've lost all that instructional time. So either the state needs to be willing to move its testing schedule, as it does in many states. Many states will have two testing schedules, one for your regular school year and one for your elongated school year schools. And they either have to push that back or, in my mind, local boards of education should be able to decide when to begin school, when to start school, because some of our school communities may still be agrarian communities where you ranch, where you farm here in Texas, and you need to have a longer summer where you're gathering wheat or you're doing something with cattle. But there's other school districts down near the coast or in areas where you do have a heavy tourism, like you do in San Antonio, for example, where maybe those schedules need to be different. But my opinion is that the school boards that are elected by the public in the communities should be able to establish when school starts and when school ends in each one of the districts. Yes, you might have a set time of 180 days or 175 days, but let the local boards of education who are duly elected by the citizens of those communities make that decision and stop this nonsense of trying to micromanage everything from the state.
And an agrarian calendar could very well suit areas that are rural, but in the urban areas, there's a different demand for time.
And it doesn't work for us in Houston. And I think when we're talking about creating a world-class education system, it sort of precludes the idea of doing that.
It seems like the calendar that we've inherited, though, is pretty much based on the agrarian or agricultural needs.
It does.
Dr. Greer, one last question. As you know, children at risk, we've been some of the hardest critics on the school system. So I think it's really nice when we're able to say we love some of the stuff that you're doing. But as we get ready for the next legislative session, one of the things that we have heard about is that a number of groups are interested in the idea of the expansion of the HISD school board with two at-large seats. In other words, you'd have a much larger school board, but you'd have two at-large seats, people that can sort of take a broader view rather than a district-wide view. How are you feeling about that idea of, one, having a larger school board, but two, having at-large members, which a number of cities have tried and tend to like, I guess? What is your thought?
My thought is, as a superintendent, I don't get involved in board politics in terms of number of seats and how many people are on the board, whether they're elected at large or whether they're appointed or they're elected by district. That's up to the local citizenry and the Board of Education itself. What I can tell you is I have worked with boards of education that have 11 board members on it, and that is a large number.
Yeah.
That does take up additional time, but, we work with them. We work with them quite successfully. I have also worked with a board where you only had 5 board members, and quite frankly, I thought that was too few. I thought that did not represent a broader view of the district at large. I can see the pluses and the minuses of both. The district I worked in North Carolina, believe it or not, was a district that had 9 members elected by districts and 2 elected at large. And, that certainly some people would say, well, that had that certainly had its advantages, but I don't mind telling you that even the members that were elected at large seemed to also not lose sight of the particular area in which they lived.
Right. Danny, one last quick question.
Yes, if I may. Dr. Greer, I read in my weekly HISD update email, which I love, that the HISD Board of Education hosted its first student roundtable discussion early March.
Yes.
Have you heard anything circle back to you about that? Has there been any telling story?
It was a fantastic meeting. I sat in on it and listened. And, it was just great to hear these young people talk with a lot of passion about their schools and what they saw that needed to be done to improve their schools. And what was really telling was when the board started asking questions about quality teachers and whether or not the students felt like that they deserved quality teachers in every classroom and whether they felt like they had quality teachers in each classroom. And I can promise you, if you really want to know what's going on in a school, go out and talk to the kids. They'll tell you. And I tell you, they didn't pull any punches. They didn't call a lot of names. One or two of them did, but we didn't write anything down, and certainly didn't go back and do any really checking up. But it was interesting to listen to them, and they all will tell you they had great teachers in their schools, and they also told you that they also, every one of them raised their hand and said there were teachers in their schools that shouldn't be there. I think after listening to them, we all ought to be very proud of the job that the majority of our teachers do. And it made me feel good. But it also told us that we were on the right track in making sure that the teachers who either were not meeting their needs or could not meet their needs were getting the help that they needed or that they had to exit the organization.
Dr. Terry Greer, the HISD superintendent. Dr. Greer, keep the bold moves up. We're really enjoying it. We think you're doing the type of job that we need done for our children here in Harris County, here in Houston. So thank you so much for everything you're doing, and hopefully you'll come back on Growing Up in America sometime in the near future.
Thank you so much. Take care, guys.
All right,
thanks, and let us know how we can help.
Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. Terry Greer from HISD, and always happy to have Terry on the line. And
yeah, absolutely. We're actually going to go out to Laura and Kirsten for a weather and traffic update. You're listening to Growing Up in America on 90.1 FM Pacifica.
Hey, guys, it sounds good in there. Well, first, before we get to traffic, which doesn't look too bad out there, I wanted to let all of our listeners know that Children at Risk has an upcoming event on April 15th. It's our Texas Summit on the Trafficking and Exploitation of Children, and I'd love everybody to come out there on April 15th. It's at the United Way from 9 to 3 p.m., and if you want to register for it, just go to our website, www.childrenatrisk.org, and I know Bob and Diana will tell you more about that and our special guest. But let's go to traffic real quick and weather, see what we've got out here.
Well, it's looking pretty nice as far as weather goes. It's in the low 70s today, and it's going to be in the 70s for the rest of the week with not much of a chance of the rain till the end of the week. And as far as traffic goes, you got a wreck on the North Loop. That is going to be if you're heading westbound at 45. Other than that, there's some construction coming into town on I-10 from the Katy area, and the roads look good on the rest of the city.
All right. Thanks, guys. You're on top of things out there. And thanks, Laura, for mentioning the Human Trafficking Summit. Human trafficking, especially here in Houston, a lot of domestic human trafficking is happening. And so it's one of the areas that we're going to tackle
this
issue.
Modern day slavery and affecting many of our children and young girls. And we'll have Senator Vandepute, who's been a leader on this issue at the legislative level, as our keynote speaker on April 15th at our Human Trafficking Summit.
Judge, have you met Letitia Vandepute from San Antonio, the senator? She was on our show last week. She's terrific.
The senator is awesome, and yes, I do know her in a past life. I was head of economic development for Texas, and it was my pleasure to work with her to bring in the Toyota assembly plant into San Antonio.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Which she represents.
Very good. So our next news item today is we want to talk a little bit about Ronald McDonald. Not a common topic, Diana, for our
That's
program.
Right.
So there's a group up in Chicago that is claiming that Ronald McDonald is really one of the reasons why we have childhood obesity in this country. So what are you saying on this, Diana?
One of the reasons, I think, well, reading the article, they're the same group that kind of led the effort to retire Joe Camel from Camel Cigarettes, basically saying, you know, this is a role model for kids, and what are we teaching our children? They love Ronald McDonald. He's friendly, he's fun, and he's a clown and lovable, and so, you know, he shouldn't be the poster child of fast food, because it encourages kids to want to go to McDonald's and
this seems to be gone like one step. Well, I mean, it's sort of an interesting deal, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So are they going to be successful, Diana?
I honestly don't know. But there's a whole coalition of health professionals, parents, and corporate accountability advocates in Chicago really pushing for it. And so they're doing kind of press events in a number of states across the country. So I'm not sure, but
it might be an interesting topic for thumbs up, thumbs down at some point.
Yeah.
How would you vote on that?
It would be a tough one.
I think of the Ronald McDonald House. And
yeah, so that's the other argument, is that he's also a figurehead for all of the charity that Ronald McDonald does as well, serving needy families and children with cancer. And so, yeah, you know, he represents a number of things, not just obesity. And
Judge, what's the business perspective on that, do you think? I mean, the whole idea, is Ronald McDonald sort of one of the reasons why we have childhood obesity here in this country?
So what next, the Pillsbury Doughboy?
There you go.
He's Mr. Carb himself, isn't he?
For goodness sakes. And I guess another question would be, couldn't Ronald tailor his message to encourage boys and girls to eat healthy? And I would think,
I mean,
that
he's sort of a healthy-looking guy.
Yeah, I think he could do that. I mean, Ronald seems like a pretty able person to communicate forceful ideas like eating healthy. So I don't know that I'm quite ready to throw Ronald out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well,
there
if you have a comment or want to weigh in, 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT.
All right. Let's do thumbs up, thumbs down, Diana. And do we have some music for thumbs up, thumbs down? I always like music for thumbs up, thumbs down. 713-526-5738. What's our topic?
So our topic today is regarding Secretary Arne Duncan's kind of advocacy push to not allow NCAA teams who don't graduate their players at above 40% level. So banning teams who don't at least graduate 40% of their team.
So this would mean that teams like Baylor, which just played, you know, they're
right,
in the Elite
Eight, graduate 36%.
So they would not have made it. So they would have been banned from postseason play. So any team that didn't graduate 40% of their kids on the team would not be able to play. So how are you voting on that, Diana?
I'm going to vote thumbs up. I think
you like that idea.
Oh, yeah. We should be raising the bar for all students, not just the academic ones, but the athletic ones who should be, you know, getting their four-year degree. I mean, that's why they're in college. So I think absolutely. And this would mean teams like Missouri, Georgia Tech, Kentucky, big teams.
That would not have been able to play.
That would not be able to play. But I'm voting up.
You're saying it's a good message. What are you thinking, Judge?
I'm thinking this is probably the most controversial question I've had asked of me.
That's why it's a thumbs up, thumbs down. That's why.
This is a tremendously controversial question, not unlike when Mark White was governor and he asked Ross Perot to bring back some recommendations. And you remember the lightning fell out of the sky when the commission said, you know, if your child isn't passing, they shouldn't be playing. No pass,
no play.
And lightning fell out of the sky because academic institutions had to get accountability back into the system before a child could do the extracurricular. So even though this is not an official partnership position,
of course,
it's an individual's thought, my sense is that schools should be about academics first, and really the extracurricular should be less important than the academics. So I would be inclined to agree with Diana that if universities aren't training young men and young women to take care of their life after college and empowering them in the business world and the global community, that probably they're missing it. Their priorities might be a little bit out of alignment.
That's right.
I think it's sort of an interesting point to look at. I think delving down into issue is also looking at what sort of service are we doing for the general student body at some of these schools. Not tied to whether they should have postseason play, but when we look at some of the graduation rates of our four-year institutions, I think some of us would be ashamed to see what some of those numbers are, that they're not very high in general. I mean, if we put U of H on that, we'd find that, you know, they aren't reaching 40% graduation. And I think that it makes us want to look a little bit deeper at some of these. But I think I'm going to agree with Arne Duncan on this one. Thumbs up
on the banning?
Yeah, let's go ahead and ban.
Wow, unanimous.
So it's a unanimous type of thing. So we'll encourage you to call in 713-526-5738. So that was thumbs up, thumbs down. I sort of like the music. Jeff, you like that music that's playing?
It fit the question, I think, very, very well.
Like Jeopardy.
All right, let's take a few phone calls. We have a few people who have called in. We have Lindsay. Lindsay, you're on the line with Growing Up in America. How are you doing today?
Just fine, thank you.
You have a comment for us?
Yes, I do. I'm not a teacher, but I do listen to your show every week.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And, you have a lot of really good points. I feel that the teachers are being demonized.
Mm.
Like I said, I'm not a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
If the teacher's this, a bad teacher. I cannot believe that in a group of people like that, there are so many of them that are below par.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't believe. I mean, where I work, there's, you know, a certain percentage that are. But I see it in the newspapers. I see it on television. And I see it in the, hear it on the radio shows. You know, that the teachers, I feel like everyone's demonizing. I don't know what the purpose of that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other comment is that, you know, the charter schools are held up as the model.
Some.
But unless mm-hmm. I understand it correctly, a charter school does not have to take every student that walks in. I mean,
they do. It's blind lottery, so they have to. But I'll tell you the advantage that a charter school has, Lindsay, for your point, is that the only people who are applying are students and parents that are motivated enough to say, I want my child to go to a charter school. So
exactly my point.
Yes.
Because when you compare, like I do know someone who works at KIPP.
Yeah.
Who works long hours.
Yeah.
The mm-hmm. parents have to have a buy-in to, you know, participate a certain amount. What about the kids whose parents don't care?
Mm-hmm.
Go out the door and go to the school down the street.
Well, that's right. I think that's a key thing. And I want to say one thing about charter schools. I mean, we talk about KIPP, and yes, but the fact of the matter, there are so many charter schools that are really... really, to not mince words, they're horrible. I mean, there are many very poorly performing charter schools, and we talk about KIPP and YES because they indeed do a very, very good job as a blind admission place. But I think you're right, Lindsay. There are many bad schools, and we would be the last people to demonize teachers. There are so many good teachers, but that does not mean that those teachers that are performing poorly, you know, we need to think about the children. Diana, you wanted to say something.
I think Lindsay, to your point about teachers, it's just that we feel that the cost is so high for a child who's in a classroom for a year with a teacher who may not be fit or prepared for that job. And so research has shown that it takes up to 3 years with a great teacher to make up that time. And so whether it's 5%, 10%, whatever it is, I think we need to take the effort to really
Jeff, you want to say a few things to Lindsay's comments?
Probably just to put an exclamation mark on what Diana's saying, but it also would be... perhaps important for us to ask the question, how do we equip our teachers?
Right.
And that takes us back to the learning institutions that are producing teachers.
Yeah.
And maybe, Lindsay, we should ask ourselves, what shall we do at our institutions of higher learning to make sure that these teachers really have all the tools they need to really teach in a global economy?
Yeah. Hey, Lindsay, I so appreciate you calling in. I think you're so on target on some of these. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, let's... Sandy, you want to talk about Ronald McDonald a little bit today?
I do. I think it's a little bit unrealistic to ask companies to get rid of their good advertising techniques.
Uh-huh. Right.
However, I think it's wonderful if public sentiment can cause these advertisers to feel the need to be more responsible.
Uh-huh.
Because I do think that obesity is a huge problem for children and adults. And our new healthcare system.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So it's critical that we not have kids eating this kind of food every day. And if we all let the advertiser know we're not willing to see that, then I think that they will be forced to go ahead and modify and make Ronald McDonald more interested in some of the healthy options that...
Yeah. Oh, we lost her. We lost Sandy. So sorry about that.
A great point, though.
That was a very good point on Sandy's part. Hey, let's go to Adam. How are you doing today? Welcome to Growing Up in America.
Hey, guys. Love the program.
Thank you so much. What question or comment, Adam?
Well, I wanted to disagree with you guys about the passing quotient for the athlete.
Oh, good, good, Adam. Good. Yeah, I want to hear your point.
Okay, well, these guys they're there for a reason, and it's not necessarily to get good grades and to graduate. It's to put butts in the seats at the basketball game.
Oh, Adam.
I mean, let's be honest. These kids are not getting paid.
Yeah, that's right.
The NCAA makes hundreds of millions of dollars a year on the sweat of these kids. Now, if they were willing to pay these kids, then maybe I would agree with you guys that they need to be able to pass their classes.
But do you think at the very least, though, Adam, don't you think because we're not paying them and because they have to go to these academic institutions, shouldn't these institutions have to work extra hard to make sure that these kids can at least graduate so they get their just reward for playing?
Right. We know that not all of them will end up in the NBA as a superstar.
But that's
the responsibility of the student.
Adam, I would say that I agree with your premise that these recruits are brought in to drive ticket sales, but it sounds like rather than all the money going back to the institution, that some of that money could be taken to spend on tutors and computer software and tools to help these athletes so they can academically achieve, and when they do finish their college career, they're equipped to go out and make a living.
Oh, I understand that, and mm-hmm. I think that should be part of it. But at the same time, these kids should also be getting paid. I mean, they're making hundreds of millions of dollars for their institutions. And for them not to be compensated, for them to put their bodies on the line, to tear their knees, to have lifetime debilitating injuries, it's a shame. And
excellent point, Adam. And I think, you know, people have made this argument about whether we should be paying these athletes. And frankly, some of them... So, no, they don't get a stipend. I think some of them would rather just go to the NBA, I think, and it's really just a developmental ground for them. But I think that's a good point. That's sort of worthy of discussion, Adam. I think, what are we doing to these young people that choose to play during college? And should we be just passing them on to the pros if indeed they're going to go to the pros? I mean, there's a lot of discussion to be had there. Hey, Adam, thanks for listening to the program today.
Thanks a lot, guys. Bye-bye.
Right.
Bye.
Well, phones are lining up. What's the deal?
Well, what I was saying is, don't they get a scholarship? They get a scholarship to be there to play ball. I feel like you should be pushing them to graduate as well.
Wow. We have a number of phone calls that we're going to get to. We're going to do a quick break. You're listening to Growing Up in America. Our guest today is Jeff Mosley from the Greater Houston Partnership, talking about corporate responsibility and children in our community. We have more phone calls to get to. We're going to get to Jeff Mosley. Let's go out to the studio with Laura. Laura, how are things going out there?
I love it. I love seeing all these phones blow up out here. It's keeping me on my toes. But I just wanted to say I'm excited to be back on the show. You know, I got married a week ago. And
right.
Have I said Laura Brown a bunch of times already?
I think maybe, but I'm kind of getting used to being Laura Nelson. So
okay, that's a good habit.
Congratulations. Yes, indeed.
But Kirsten's going to give us a little bit of an update on traffic.
Well, we got that same wreck on the North Loop that is tying up traffic on the west side of the North Loop, and that wreck is in the westbound lane of 610. We got a new one on 59 northbound at 610 as well. So that's all we got.
All righty. Thank you, Kirsten. Thank you, Laura Nelson. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Judge, you mind if we take a couple more phone calls here?
Let's go for it.
Let's go. We have Trish on the line. Trish, welcome to Growing Up in America. Question or comment on Ronald McDonald. Are you a fan of the clown?
I disagree. I disagree with the organization. I've always disagreed with the organization, actually, even with the Joe Camel thing, because it's not up to a group to try to educate parents to educate their kids. The parents should know, and cartoons and symbols like that are not just for kids. There's been Betty Boop. I mean,
yeah.
For years, you know, cartoons are both for adults and kids, and it's always been up to the adults to basically parcel out, you know, which is which to the kids. It's our responsibility, not this organization, and it's certainly not McDonald's or Joe Camel or Playboy and their cute little girl. I mean, it's not up to them. They're just doing what comes naturally. They're advertising. It's up to us to tell our kids what's good advertising, what's not.
Right.
But they should be, actually, they shouldn't be listening to any of it personally, but it's an
interesting subject, though, isn't it? But I think the sentiment is on your side, Trish, on this one, in terms of parents do need to take more control. But as a society, we need to be sort of watching our messages, and especially watching what's happening in school. When we eliminate things like PE from the school or push it to the side for the test, I mean, we're sort of doing our society harm, aren't we, in terms of encouraging exercise and so forth in regards to childhood obesity?
Well, it's not Ronald McDonald who needs to go. The menu needs to change.
Yeah.
That's right.
No, but
that's going to be a harder fight, I think.
We continue to buy. So, hey, Trish, thanks for calling in today.
All right, you bet. Thanks.
Thanks.
All right. So let's go. Kathy had a question for us, and she's been on the line for a little bit. Kathy, welcome to Growing Up in America. Question or comment today?
Yes, I have a comment about teachers.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I don't think that teacher training is where the problem lies.
Really?
Yeah. I went
what
to
do you think?
Southwest Texas, which is now Texas State University.
Uh-huh.
And although I was a biology major, all my roommates were education majors. And this is in the 70s. I'm hoping it's done nothing to make it better. They got a great training to be in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's where the problem is.
Where do you think the problem is?
Is teacher morale.
Oh, interesting.
Teachers are under the thumb every year of their children performing on this one test.
Yep, yep.
They are responsible for all the previous years of training that child has had. They're responsible for whether that child ever had any preschool. They're responsible for whether there's parents involved with their after-school education, all on the basis of one test score.
Mm-hmm.
So they're demoralized.
Yeah.
It
yep.
doesn't matter how good a teacher they are. They're really forced during the course of their entire school year to drill all the concepts and practice on test-taking skills.
Well, two things I want to mention. One is that, the way that they're measured now is improvement on the part of the students. So not a matter of, how well they did on the test. It's just a matter of did they improve during that academic year. But the second point, to your point, is that a lot of good research exists that teachers who have a bad principal are much more likely to leave the profession. In other words, that whole good morale and what sort of culture does a principal set can really have an impact. And we see good young teachers with bad principals that sometimes leave.
I totally agree with you there. I had four kids go through the public school system, and every campus was a reflection of that principal.
Yeah.
That is their regime.
Yeah.
It's all about leadership.
Hey, Kathy, thanks for calling in today.
Sure.
All righty. We're just going to town here. Let's take a couple more here, and then I want to get to some of this discussion. Lori, you're on the air with Growing Up in America. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm okay. I wanted to just say something on behalf of the universities.
Yes.
I was a graduate assistant at one of the universities that you mentioned that doesn't graduate enough of its athletes.
Which one, Lori?
Missouri.
Oh, okay.
And I can tell you that they went to really extreme lengths to help these guys graduate. They had paid for tutors. We had people who would stand outside and make sure they went to class, tick them off, because, they don't want to go to class.
Yeah, they want to play basketball, right?
Yeah.
They want to play football.
And so I don't think it's quite fair to say that the universities really aren't trying to give these guys an education.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of agree with that previous caller who said, well, part of that is their responsibility as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can tell you just from being one of the tutors for those guys,
yeah.
tried to tutor, and we'd have special sessions just for the athletes, and they'd show up, and the athletic department would have somebody who'd come take attendance, and as soon as that attendance person left to go check on another group, they were out the door.
Lori, why do you think some schools do better at graduation rates than other schools? Why do you have some where you see, 86% graduation rates, and at others you see 16% graduation rates with their athletes?
Wow, I don't know, because I don't have, I only have the limited experience of the schools that I attended.
Yeah.
And
it's an interesting thought, though, isn't it? I mean, some are seemingly more successful, and it may be just in the type of student they're recruiting, but if Duke can have, 96% graduation rates and make it to the Final Four consistently, they may be a model. Not every school is a Duke, though. I mean, that's for sure, and not every school has the same resources, but you think that these athletic programs. I mean, Judge, what do you think about this? I mean, obviously, we're seeing some schools that have a much higher rate of graduation.
Well, there are universities that have proven that they can graduate their athletes. And so there are some formulas. It's not a mystery. If we'll go back and understand the formulas to success and then insist that nobody gets into playoffs unless they take a look at how to use those formulas, I think the rates would go up.
It's the expectation. I mean, what's more important, allowing your player to play or making sure that your player is going to class and getting their academic work done? I mean, if the expectation was that you needed to pass your classes, then I think that they would be making more effort to do it.
Yeah. Hey, Lori, thanks so much for calling in.
Sure.
All right, let's do just one more, and then I want to hit a couple of questions. So let's see. Rebecca, you're on the line. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you today?
Good, good. Do you have a question or comment for us?
I just wanted to continue the comments on the athletes who are graduating or not graduating. The distinction I think we're missing here is that college students are treated as adults, legal adults.
Right.
They sign contracts, and they are contracts, for scholarship with these colleges. And they take responsibility for their own graduation just as a paying student takes responsibility for his own graduation. The other side of that is that because that is a contract and they are treated as adults, if a student decides to drop out and take a national contract with a national team, the college really doesn't have leverage in keeping that student in college once his season is over with.
Some good points. That's some good points. Hey, Ann, thanks for calling in today. Rebecca, thanks for calling in today.
Thank you.
All righty. Hey, this is obviously a big deal, Jeff. I mean, people want to talk about this. This is interesting. You're listening to Growing Up in America here on KPFT, 713-526-5738. Let's talk to Jeff Mosley, who's here in the studio with us. Jeff, as the director of the president of the Greater Houston Partnership, obviously you're sort of the voice of the business community, for whether you like that or not. I mean, many people would see the Greater Houston Partnership as sort of representative of the business community. When you look at the lives of children here in Houston, when we see Texas, we see consistently in Texas and in Houston, we seem to be at the bottom of many lists in terms of children and welfare children. When we think about that and we think about our future workforce and the education levels, what is the business community seeing and what sort of responsibility do they see to make those numbers different?
I think, Dr. Bob, the challenges are enormous for our region. Part of that is because we are so incredibly successful in allowing people to make a living. We are affordable. We have a delightful climate. We kind of laugh about that, but relative to so many other areas of America or even the world, this is a great place to be summer or winter. And people are voting with their feet. We know over the next 30 years, the Houston region will add the population of Los Angeles.
Amazing.
Wow.
Why? Because this is a great place to raise your kids. It's a great place to get ahead. And we have a very open commercial community that says, we want to know what your idea is so we can go make some money. This is a city of commerce and business. But because we have so many people moving into our area, can you imagine the stress and the demand on a school district like HISD, 190,000 students, where they have about 90 different languages spoken.
Right.
That is unimaginable to have that kind of demand placed on the teaching staff and the superintendents to communicate ideas and to communicate learning. Not to worry, we still think that we should push forward and press for continued success and training our boys and girls, because they are tomorrow's workforce. That's our future.
Oh, yeah.
So we're joined at the hip. But the reality of it is, part of what we're suffering from is the fact that we are tremendously recognized as a great community in which to raise a family and grow your business.
You know, and along those lines, we do an extraordinary job of recruiting talent from out of state. And sometimes I wonder if businesses don't care as much about the education of children in our midst here in Houston, because it's so easy to recruit people from out of state to fill up those gaps within our own workforce. How important, though, is it for us to say, our own children, whether they be our children or our neighbors' children or our children from across town, that all of those children have that equal opportunity to be successful? And how important is it to our future economy that those children grow up with a good education?
Well, Dr. Bob, you'd be pleased to know that within the Greater Houston Partnership and the business community at large, public education, private education is a constant discussion. We have a standing permanent committee within our organization devoted only and exclusively to education. And, of course, it's exciting because we're bringing in voices like Dr. Greer or Dr. David Anthony from the Sci-Fair or Dr. Duncan Klusman. They're coming into these committees working hand in glove, not only with business leaders, but with the charter schools, the private schools, so we can have this ongoing dialogue about best practices. How do we become more globally competitive when we live in a global community? So you'd be very pleased to see that there's a very strong commitment from the business leadership, and I've had the benefit of talking to other communities. They're very, very fascinated with the strong, direct commitment our business leadership is showing to education.
Jeff, what would you say is probably the biggest challenge for Houston?
Probably one of the challenges and opportunities for us is just we're so vast and big. Houston really is not unlike Los Angeles. If you compare our region to any region, we probably have more similarities to L.A. Why? Because we're so spread out, and yet we have in our area a city that is the fourth largest city in America, no racial majority, almost equal Anglo, Hispanic, African-American, with a huge Asian population. The largest geographic Chinatown is in Houston. And here you have Harris County, that is one of the biggest counties in the nation. So the vastness of our region really is somewhat of a challenge. When you can think about taking Philadelphia and dropping it inside the loop of Houston, and then you can add Seattle and Washington, you can add about six cities, and they fit inside the geographic boundaries of the city of Houston. That's a strikingly different issue than dealing with one of those six cities.
Right.
That's right. Oh, that's right. It presents great opportunity, too, though, doesn't it?
Huge opportunities. And because we are so vast and we have these tremendous resources, we are attractive to businesses that are looking for workforce development. And what do those employers want? When we were working with Toyota, they didn't want us to train up everybody in the San Antonio region to be an assembly line worker. What they were looking for was a workforce that could read, could write, could understand a training manual, could do the physical labor within that assembly line, but somebody that they could train on how to build an automobile to their specifications. So we have an opportunity to make sure that this graduation rate, that's probably the biggest opportunity for us, is to work with Dr. Greer, Dr. Anthony, Dr. Klusman, on making sure that that graduation rate continues to go upward.
One of the things that we see here in the city of Houston is that when you look at the million-plus children that we have in Harris County, 47% of those children are living at or near the poverty level. So that's about 470,000 children. We know that a child that grows up in poverty is much less likely to graduate from high school. We know that that child is much, of course, if they don't graduate from high school, they're not going to go to college. And so that presents its own sort of challenges for us here in the city of Houston in terms of making sure that all these kids see this bright future. And time again, as we talk about this, you know, I'll hear public officials say, well, maybe these kids, we should be doing vocational training for them. You know, maybe we should be teaching them how to be plumbers and electricians. But we have such a low percentage of kids that are going to college, and yet when Diane and I go out to these high schools, more often than not, what we're seeing are very smart kids who aren't being encouraged to graduate and go on to college. Sort of the opposite problem. It's sort of like we should maybe be reinvesting in our kids a little bit.
And maybe I should ask you, Dr. Bob and Diana, because Texas Monthly used to do a rating of all the public schools, elementary, mid, high, and high school. And I never will forget this. I was, of course, flipping over to make sure that I was a good parent and checking out the public school where my daughters were. And I was so relieved I found out, you know, the five-star rating or whatever.
Right.
And then I noticed a school right across the street that was rated lower, same, demographics.
Yeah.
And then I flipped over to Laredo, and the poverty level in those schools was in the 90 percentile, and they were all like five-star. And the schools where my daughters were and the school across the street were like 2% poverty. So I was trying to figure, I mean, maybe you can help me with this, but why is it you can flip over and look at schools from communities where you have a 90% poverty level, but they're five-star exemplary?
Oh, yeah, and we have examples right here in Houston.
And then you've got neighborhoods where maybe there's only 2 to 5% that are poverty level, and they're not succeeding like some of the schools in the poverty area. So I guess That's kind of perplexing to a layperson like myself.
And you see examples right here in Houston of places like DeBakey High School and HSPVA, where smaller theme-based schools, high poverty levels, high diversity, but these are some of the best schools in the state. You know, these are schools that are doing a very, very good job. And I think time and time again, we see the examples of what really works, yet what we see that doesn't work is the big comprehensive urban high school.
Is it as simple, too, as suggesting that perhaps in Webb County, down in Laredo, that the parents have ownership and that they're really engaged, and so that while poverty levels certainly are a factor, the factor would be getting those parents involved in that child's life. Is it as simple as that, Dr. Bob?
Well, I think that's one of the many things that need to be addressed. I mean, parents need to be involved. We talked about this earlier in the program, that that first battle is making sure the parent is involved. And when a parent is involved, that can make a big difference. We see at many elementary schools, some of these high-poverty families, the mom desperately wants to be involved. They want to be involved. So sometimes it's incumbent upon the school to say, well, how do I involve this mom who maybe has a third-grade education herself? So
another great example is the High School for Criminal Justice and Law Enforcement. And that's a place, a small community, where kids go because they may want to be a police officer or they're looking for a career right after graduation. But then they get there. It's a small environment where they get one-on-one attention, very interesting, theme-based, engaging learning about issues that they really are interested in, and then all of a sudden they want to go to college. So it's just that extra push and something that they're interested in that really propels them forward.
We have a bunch of questions for the judge that came in. All the other questions about the NCAA and Marilyn McDonald, you know, they hung up on us. But, Johnny, how are you doing today?
Well, feeling a little bit better, I guess. Your guest mentioned... Your guest earlier mentioned about how many people from across the United States are gravitating towards this part of the country, the Gulf Coast or Texas.
Yeah, what do you think of that, Johnny?
Well, I'm thinking, you know, in the age of instant communication, satellite communication, all kinds of devices for instant real-time communication, I'm thinking that a lot of that has to do with the reputation that comes from having dynamic media, and I'm referring to KPFT.
Oh, there you go. I mean,
how many
it's because of us.
You think about the kind of good work that comes out of that radio station. All the volunteer programmers and producers who produce programs 24/7. That has a way of leaking out,
Bravo.
Especially young people who are very into instant communications. And we are narcissistic, okay? So if you want to really reward KPFT, make sure they ensure their good works, the city of Houston should vote to make some kind of a one-time grant, or maybe a biannual grant, or every five-year grant to assist KPFT in their facility expansion and improvement as a way of saying thank you for putting up with all the crap and the hatred and doing such good work for us.
Johnny, you're my man. Thank you so much for your comment.
One last thing, very quickly,
Johnny. We're running out of time.
This idea of athletics and you can't play if you don't study, that's a bunch of crap. Because you were saying how we need to encourage athletics. It's a small percentage of the people who are playing in these quasi-professional things. How about you encourage all the kids to do athletics and field trips and stuff?
There you go.
That's
where the smaller learning communities come in.
What's drug dogs all about? Quit all that. These aren't prisons. These are places you're supposed to like to go to.
Johnny, thank you so much. Take care, man.
Thanks, Johnny.
All righty. Okay, let's do one more here. We have Mike. Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. I appreciate the conversation, things I'm hearing today. When I was listening, you all were talking about the business and the business relationship, or the relationship the businesses have with the schools and with the districts, and I think that's great. I think there's kind of a paradox there, though. I read in the Chronicle recently that Texas gives approximately $15 billion a year in tax breaks to businesses. I don't know if that person had the figures right or not, but it sounds right. I live in Cypress Fairbanks, and there's an issue out here with funding for schools.
Yeah.
Part of it has to do with the tax base for homes, but also I know that when you're attempting to attract businesses to your area, one of the things you do is give them a break on your tax on
your
taxes.
That's right.
And ultimately, what that results in is less money that goes into the school districts.
Yeah, let's talk about that real quick, Mike.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jeff, what do you think about this, what Mike's saying?
Mike, thanks for raising this question. I would suggest that no taxing jurisdiction ever give a dime of incentive unless it can be shown that there's a return on that investment.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely no reason to just unilaterally give away the tax base. However, until there's a federal law that bans incentives, communities that are serious about recruiting high-paying jobs have to be ready to sharpen their pencils and show the taxpayers how participating at a small level provides a return on investment. So we would say you have to be very, very thoughtful before you get into that discussion.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, thanks so much for your call.
Mike. Thank you.
That was a good question. Laura, what time is it?
It's our favorite new segment, the Final Four at 54, Bob.
And Final Four just sort of blends this time of year, doesn't
it?
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah. I love the Final Four 54 music. So, Jeff, on this segment, we're just going to ask a couple Final Four questions for you.
Let them rip.
Where'd you go to kindergarten, Jeff?
This is going to shock you, but I'm old enough to where kindergarten was not around.
Wow.
So I did not have the privilege, and that would explain maybe my warped personality. I did not get to go to kindergarten.
Kids need kindergarten, don't they?
Kids need kindergarten, and I would just stand at the window and see boys and girls walking to school, and I'd beg to go to school, and finally, when it was first grade,
there you went.
My mom said, it's time for you to go to school, and I said, but I can't read and write.
Oh. Well, you turned out great.
Where'd you go to first grade?
In Las Cruces, New Mexico. Dad was teaching at New Mexico State.
Do you remember the name of your elementary school?
I'll have to think about that. We lived on Chilton Drive.
Elementary. There you go. What's your favorite childhood memory? Question number two.
I grew up in East Africa. Dad taught for Oklahoma State. And so I really have a very profound memory of going to a one-room schoolhouse.
Huh.
I was the only one
in East Africa.
Yeah, in Ethiopia. I was the only one in my grade, 7th and 8th grade.
Hmm.
And our teachers were the wives of the faculty. So
wow.
I had a tremendous mid-high experience. Walk home for lunch, walk back in the afternoon. But a very powerful memory of mid-high.
What a great place to grow up.
Jeff, if you had to choose one childhood memory or experience that really impacted your career choice today, what would it be?
I think getting to grow up overseas and the travel associated with that, I had an appreciation for other cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a very, very deep appreciation for America.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as I was being introduced to and understanding the rest of other global communities, it gives you a real sense of being an American.
Wow. Wow. And our final question, if a Hollywood actor had to play you today, who would it be?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think we can eliminate Johnny Depp. and I don't think Sean Connery would be the person, but probably somebody real nerdy. David Plouffe, he was the advisor to Obama.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or Karl Rove, somebody like that, maybe a nerd.
Very nice.
David Plouffe. There you go. He's not even a Hollywood actor. He'd be happy to know that he was a Hollywood star.
A celebrity.
So, very
well,
good.
Well, great. For more facts and information on children, visit us at childrenatrisk.org. And hopefully our listeners will go to the website to look at our summit on April 15th on human trafficking. It's a huge issue in our city and one that you should be aware of. So hopefully you'll be able to check that out.
Jeff, I hope you've enjoyed the program today. We've so enjoyed having you on. I hope maybe we could have you call in every once in a while and give us sort of that business update.
Well, thank you, Dr. Bob. I'll be pleased to anytime put that call in. Diana, thank you for letting me join you guys.
Thank you.
So,
great show. Thanks so much to our callers who called in. That was fantastic.
Yeah. And so for the next couple weeks now, I'm going to be on the road, Diana. You're going to be here. I'm going to be traveling around the state of Texas as we do our high school rankings. So we're looking forward to that. So thank you, Laura. Thank you, Kirsten. Make sure that you hug your kids. And we will see you next time on Growing Up in America here on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio.
This fall, KPFT will hold an election to seat delegates on the local station board. There will be separate but parallel elections for both listener and staff delegates to the Pacifica Foundation's 5 local station boards. That election may seem like a long way away, but it will be here before you know it. Why not consider participating in KPFT as a member of our board? Board delegates are elected to bring diverse grassroots voices from the community into the dialogue between the community and the station. candidates are chosen in both listener and staff pools. To be a listener candidate, you can contribute at least $25 to a foundation radio station. If you are a KPFT volunteer and want to be considered as a staff candidate, you must complete 30 or more verifiable volunteer hours at a foundation radio station. Pacifica's principles inspire us to strive for diversity, and we encourage members of our diverse communities to consider being a part of this board. This is KPFT, Houston.
Explore a world of entertainment April 17th, 18th, 24th, and 25th at the Houston International Festival, spotlighting the Caribbean in downtown Houston. KPFT is proud to sponsor an amazing schedule of great music on the world music stage with local favorites and international superstars. This year's lineup includes George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic, Ozo Motley, King Sunny Ade, Joe Ely, Steel Pulse, and more. Get discounted tickets till April 12th at any Houston area HEB beginning March 24th, or buy them now online at ifest.org. Come downtown to the Houston International Festival April 17th through 25th, supported by KPFT Houston.